Saturn podcast. Make left traffic, cleared for the option.
Minneapolis departure, Archer 641, Charlie 2000, climbing 3000.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Montana 172, Romeo Hotel, holding short on 133, ready to take off.
Albert Delta Crossing, 221 Mike, and I'm downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Welcome to episode 34 of the In the Pattern Podcast. Thank you guys so much for joining us this evening, this morning, or this afternoon. 34 for us, for our friends south of the border. I think that's how you say 34. Anyways, this is Chris coming to you from sunny Arizona. I can't believe this is called winter out here. It's been nearly 80 degrees for the last week. And with me tonight, I've got John and Brad. Unfortunately, Mark is not able to be with us again this evening. That right there was Brad coming in. What are you doing, Brad? Anything cool lately?
Mostly chilling. It's
physically.
It's cold enough that they've closed schools here tomorrow. Tomorrow's low is minus 18 Fahrenheit, and with the wind chill, it's going to be approaching 50 below. So they don't want the kiddies out on the corner, but that's okay because I can still go to work.
Brad uses a snowmobile, I believe, or ice skates. I'm not sure. How do you get to work these days in that kind of weather?
Oh, it's just cold. It's not snowy.
Really?
I mean, not particularly snowy.
Typically when it gets down that bad, when it gets that low, it really is beyond even snowable weather, right? Isn't it too cold, too dry or something?
The meteorologist will tell you that it's never too cold to snow, but usually it doesn't get this cold unless the skies are completely clear.
Yeah.
And then when it's cloudy, the clouds will hold the heat in. And when it's not, then the heat just goes away. Any surface heat from the sun just goes. So here we are. So, yeah, it's chilly. It's too cold to fly. I was supposed to fly the Mooney again on Tuesday for another lesson and had to cancel because of the cold.
Are all your planes in hangars out there?
Yes. In fact, I think at the airport that I am, and as far as I know, I think all of the Twin Cities metro airports, there are no planes that are not hangared. It's just not feasible with the amount of snow that we get. It's just not feasible to leave a plane outside. You wouldn't be able to get it out until April.
Probably not a good idea. And that other voice you heard a minute ago is John coming to you from the frigid Northeast. How about that Arctic polar weather you guys got up there? Not too bad.
The polar bear-nado? Yeah, that's coming up soon in sci-fi.
The bear-nado, huh? The polar bear-nado. That's scary.
We were making jokes, me and my friends, a little while ago about what the next sci-fi movie would be based on the polar vortex. It's fairly cold here. I think this morning our low was like 3, which for Baltimore is pretty much unheard of. And this is the second time this year we've gotten below 10 degrees into the single digits. So we just got, I want to say, somewhere between 5 to 7 inches throughout the area yesterday. So everything kind of closed down and all that. But so not much flying going on here. Not very good flying weather either, because pretty much everything is going to be grounded. But
Yep. You know, it's funny, today on Wednesdays, everybody knows I work at a church, and pretty good sized church. There's a cafe at the church, and on Wednesdays they cook lunch, and we go up and get a good lunch, and it's $3. You know, how can you beat that? So anyways, I'm walking up from my office to that area, and as I'm passing by, there's 3 or 4 guys sitting out side on the furniture, patio type furniture, and they're in the sun, and they like decide to move over in the shade because it got too warm. So you're in Arizona when
that's just wrong.
it's January out. These guys are wearing, you know, t-shirts and stuff. And they're like, yeah, you guys want to move over a little bit? It's kind of getting, you know, warm. I'm like going, wow, that's messed up.
Wow.
So, I know, huh?
Wow.
I've been here since January of 1990. I cannot remember a January like this ever before, or a winter in general. It's usually not like this. January is typically the coldest month. Typically, we're going out and we're putting like sheets over, you know, the bushes and stuff that typically live all year long, so they don't get frostbit. That's normal. So we do hit around, you know, the 30s and even typically just below freezing for an overnight temperature, and then we'll warm up, you know, 45, 50 during the day, and then go back down to that in the evening. This stuff here with 78, 79, nearly 80 today during the day, and like 45, 50 at night is just, I don't know what to call that, but I'm afraid what summer has in store for us if this is what winter is supposed to be like. So our summer translates to your winter. You don't go flying because it's 50 below outside. I don't go flying because it's 150 above, you know. It's the same deal, really, you know. You'll be like in July, oh, I went out for this great flight, blah, blah, blah. It was awesome. I couldn't even touch the plane. I was going to spontaneously combust.
Well, no, because in July we get thunderstorms. But yeah. At 3 in the morning, it's not that bad in Arizona in August.
That's almost, other than the direct sun isn't on you, it's still 100 degrees.
Right, but the direct sun isn't on you. You don't have the radiation heat.
It's a dry heat.
And, just like your oven.
Yeah, and but at 3 in the morning here, it's still 50 below.
You know, yeah.
There is no good time of the day here. It's cold, and it's really cold.
Yeah, there's cold and really cold. Yeah, that's right.
The sad thing is that somehow it's January in Minnesota, and I'm not night current.
Yeah. You know,
the sun goes down at like – I mean, we're gaining 2 minutes a day, and the sun goes down at like 5:02.
Mm-hmm.
So put into perspective. I mean,
that's about right. Like what we're looking at too, and I'm not night current either.
I remember when I worked in Missouri, when I lived in Missouri. That's where I came from. It seemed like this time of year, like around 3 o'clock, it was starting to get dark already. Like walking home from school and stuff, it was already starting to get dark a little bit.
Oh yeah, no, it was in around about December 21, our shortest day of the year. Sunset is like 4.
Wow.
And the sunrise is about 8:15. It's I can handle the cold. I can handle the snow. The dark is really hard.
Hey, that's what's tough on a lot of people. That's the reason why there's, you know, like I think Alaska has like some of the most suicides because they're in darkness for so long. Then they also have days where the sun doesn't ever set. So I don't know. You can't make those people happy. I don't know what to do.
Yeah,
it's, just kidding.
I hate the dark thing down here too. It's not quite as bad as 8 and 4, but it's more like 7:30 and 4:30. So not much better. We only get like an extra hour, but. Yeah, it kills me. I'm actually surprised I'm not night current right now. I was actually thinking about doing that, and I guess the flight with my grandfather ended up happening, so I didn't end up going up at night. But I might still go grab a plane and just go by myself one night or something.
Yeah, it is so much fun. I had so much fun last summer flying all those hours at night. And then I still have been keeping up on it every you know, about every 30 days or so, I'll get in a night flight. It's just, I find it so peaceful. It is just, it's not near as much to distract you, and you can just like, just chill. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really enjoy flying at night. It's a great time with passengers too, because they're just like, oh, it's everything's so pretty, and the air is so stable, so they're not on edge. And
yeah,
it's great.
That's one of the huge benefits, is that the air is so stable. It's smooth as silk out typically. So anyways, this is a aviation podcast, so let's move on from that weather and stuff and keep talking about the airplanes and stuff like that. I know, John, you haven't got a chance to get back up there, but Brad's had a recent flight we're going to talk about. I had a recent flight and some other things going on, so I'm going to kick it over to Brad and have you tell us what's going on out there with your last flight.
Yeah, like I said, it's been a little bit cold, so it's, some of the flights have had to cancel, and just a busy time of year for us, but managed to get away on this past Sunday and headed up to Duluth to see some friends. Took the only plane that was available, which is the Cherokee 6. So it was the most expensive way I could have done it by air. But it was a nice trip. It was a pretty easy trip. Started out as VFR. I departed VFR out of Crystal and headed north, and then there was some undercast coming into play, and so I just got on the horn and filed with Minneapolis Center, got an IFR clearance to Duluth, and made a real nice, easy approach. There was a small layer that I had to get through, but I knew it was small because I could see the top, and I knew from the ATIS what the bottom was, so it was a very, very easy make. And just got a chance to fly up, see some friends, got a crew car from the airport. Monaco is the FBO on the field up there, and the really nice people have a really nice FBO and really nice crew cars. So they were kind enough to let me use one, and bombed around and saw friends and had lunch and hung out a bit and got in the plane and just stayed below the cloud deck the whole way home, flew VFR the whole way back. I had to get out in a little bit of a hurry because there was some light freezing rain that was on the way, and that is stuff that I won't mess with. But then being Duluth, after the light freezing rain, it wasn't going to get above zero for 4 or 5 days. So I was, you know, wanting to be home before then. So I was really glad that I was able to get out and make it home easily and safely. So, you know, good use for an airplane, just a nice way to spend a Sunday afternoon in frigid Minnesota.
So, yeah, that sounds great. And I need to get out a little bit more myself. I know I say that and I go fly quite a bit, but isn't it one of those things that you think about like every week, like, oh, I should go. And I have friends here that post on Facebook that seem to have no job, but they have a plane and somehow are able to afford it and fuel because all they do is fly. Does any of you have one of those friends?
Yeah, it's you pretty much when I look on social media. Between you and Brad.
Oh, man. Well, today's only Wednesday. 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. I got a chance to take a friend of mine that I work with, his dad and his father-in-law, up for a flight. And this was pretty cool because his dad he's from Laos, Vietnam area, right? And he don't live in Laos now. He actually lives in Paris, France, and that's where they've actually lived for, you know, quite a long time, about maybe like 20 years or so. And there's this whole long story that goes back to, you know, how they got there, why they're there, why his son's here and all this. But just to kind of make a long story short, he's in town because his son and his daughter-in-law, they had a baby recently. So they were in for the holidays and stayed, you know, a month or so. And matter of fact, they just left yesterday. But he asked me, hey, would you take my dad and father-in-law up for a flight? I said, yeah, I'd be glad to. Let's do that. So we got it all scheduled and set up the flight for Sunday. And this was just a couple, not last Sunday, but the Sunday before. And so I show up at the airport, and they're already there. They were there like almost an hour before I told them to show up, so that must mean they're excited to go do this. So I get there and they pull up and I meet them both. Now, His father-in-law is one of actually my volunteers at my work, so he volunteers for me. So I already know him, which is cool. But his dad I'd never met, obviously, from Laos, so that was cool. But the funny thing is that his dad didn't know why we were there. His dad had flown for the Royal Lao Air Force during Vietnam. So he was a Laos Air Force pilot, and he had flown the venerable Cessna 172 as a trainer plane, but they called them T-41s, he said. And he had flown DC-3s and some other planes that drop bombs, he said, and different things like that. But he hadn't been inside a small plane like that since 1976. So made everything really kind of exciting. And he really didn't know why we were there. And then we told him, hey, we're going to go for a flight. We're going to go up to Sedona for lunch. And he was all excited and kind of giggling and everything. And he has a pretty thick accent. I would love to hear what his French sounds like, because his English with this, Laos accent is pretty interesting. I just wonder what his French is like. But, you know, he speaks French fluently now. Obviously, he's been there for a long time. So anyways, we pre-flight the plane, and he walks around with me and everything, you know, just like old times for him. And we get ready to go, and I recorded the whole thing. And the cool thing was that I also had another friend of mine, Kyle, who was taken off out of Chandler, that was going to go to Sedona as well. And so we decided to try and figure out a way to meet up in the air some way. So he said, all right, I'm going to take off at 11 o'clock. So I figured, well, I'm going to get, I have the plane from like 11 to 3. We're going to get there a little bit early to pre-flight and get ready. I figure I'd be off the ground by 20 after or so. And by the time he comes across Bravo and transitions that and yada, 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 we should be pretty close to each other. So anyways, he's texting me or sending me direct message through Facebook or something like that, saying that, he's delayed, the plane needed fuel, the fuel truck's taking forever, other issues, yada, yada, yada. Then he finally says, okay, I'm getting ready to take off. And that was right as I'm getting ready to call ground. I checked my phone one more time to see what was up with him, and he said he was getting ready to leave. So I thought, well, I think I'll be a little bit ahead of him. But we should be able to meet up at some point. So anyways, we take off, and weather's pretty good. The weather's great, in fact. I mean, clear blue skies, but I want to say clouds or fogginess. It wasn't that. It was just the gunkiness of the air in the city. The smog and stuff was just gross. Yep. As soon as you got up and you could see that, ugh. So the nice thing is we're heading north, and the further we get, the clearer it gets, which is beautiful. So I told him before we take off that once I get a beam Lake Pleasant, I'm going to go to 1-2-3-4-5. You guys ever done that? For air-to-air frequency?
Yeah. No.
All right. 1-2-3.45. I think it's a common thing some people do to talk air-to-air without being on a frequency other people use a lot.
Yeah, it's curiously, it's not one of the designated air-to-air frequencies, but
no, it's not. Okay. It's not specifically supposed to be using it, but anyways, I learned from someone else. What can I say? Anyway, so I get a beam Lake Pleasant, and I go, "Hey, Kyle, it's Chris. Are you on with me yet?" And this other guy replies back, "Are you looking for Kyle Matthews?" And I was like, "Yeah, this is Chris. Who's this?" He goes, "My name's Kyle too. I'm coming out of Scottsdale. I'm going to meet you guys up in Sedona. I'm about Pine," he said. And so he's a little bit ahead of us. I was like, "Oh, okay." He goes, "Kyle hasn't checked in yet. I think he was running late." I said, "Yeah, I figured he was going to be a little bit behind us." So I slow the airplane down a little bit and call a few minutes later. "Kyle, are you with me yet?" And he jumps in, "Yeah, I'm here, but I'm still on with Phoenix, with Approach." He was still on with Phoenix Approach. I'm like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, they haven't turned me loose yet." I'm like, "Wow." And he tells me he's at 8,500 feet. And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, I figured he'd just transition the Phoenix Bravo. They had let him loose, and then he'd go just keep going straight, and then he'd transition Deer Valley and head on up. But instead, they had him fly way over the top of that and get to 8,500 feet, which was really weird because I only had to get to 7,500 feet to get to Sedona. So anyways, it was just kind of odd. That was just maybe a little bit of the way he wanted to do things instead of the way they wanted to do things. I'm not sure. Anyways, so I get a hold of Kyle. He gets loose from them, and he said he's at the approaching like the south end of where the lake is, Lake Pleasant, and I'm already just past the north end of it. So I told him I'd do a big, you know, slow 360 and see if he can catch up to me. So I did that. And here's the funny thing. So he's in an Archer 3. I'm in a Cessna 172. So we got that low wing, high wing thing, and we're trying to find each other. It was impossible. So we're given position reports to each other, speed, altitude, all this stuff. And he's purposely staying anywhere from 500 to 1,000 feet above me. In retrospect, I should have been above him, but he was coming down from 8,500. I was trying to get up to 7,500. So anyways,
that's a recipe for a midair.
Yeah, it is, you know, and you know, I'm slowing up to get, let him get closer and closer. I'm trying to get some of this, you know, on video and whatnot. And so anyways, I think we're about at some point 12 miles out from Sedona, and you know, we should be able to see each other. He should be at my 3 o'clock, about 500 feet above me, and I can't see him for nothing. We're both the same distance away. We switch over to Sedona's frequency and give our position reports, and you know, I'm and the way we do Sedona is that we cross midfield and then enter a left downwind for three. And a lot of people just shoot straight in for three and, you know, don't care. But, you know, I'd rather not, because people depart on 2-1 on the other side. That's just how you do Sedona. You come in on three, you depart 2-1, and that's it. But a lot, you know, some people come on 2-1, but not many. Anyways, so at some point he's like, you know, Archer, blah, 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 and I'm crossing midfield, going to enter a left downwind, and I'm looking straight at midfield. I'm like 3 miles away or less at this point, and I don't see him. And in my head the whole time I'm going, Kyle, you think you're at Sedona right now. I think you might be in Prescott or you know, Winslow or William. I don't know where you are, but you're not in Sedona right now. You know, I'm convinced we've been trying to find each other for so long and haven't found each other. And we're only, you know, we're not very far apart. So anyways, I get over top of the airport, and I make my position report. And he says that he's turning downwind. Here comes that wing up. Boom. I see it. Finally, after all this time, I see his wing up on downwind. And I report that I see him finally. And then we both land at Sedona. It was a little windy, which was going to almost, you know, screw up the day, because 3 days before he's like, how's the weather looking? And I'm like going, it's looking kind of windy. It was looking like it was going to be 15 to 20 knots. And then the next day on Saturday, he's like, what's it looking like now? And I'm like, well, the winds have gotten quite a bit less. It's only looking 5 to 10, which wasn't going to be too bad. And then the day we go up, they were single digits. But when it's coming up that upside of runway 3, because this, you know, this airport's on top of a mesa at a little over 5,000 feet, there's some updrafts there that just can throw you around. So therefore, as I've mentioned before, when I land at Sedona, I always try and land at runway 3, and I shoot for the 1,000-foot marker. And once I'm, you know, if I shoot for that, I know that none of those upwinds should be bothering me by then. But it was a you know, a landing where I had to do a lot of adjustments to keep, you know, center line and so forth. But made a good landing. The guys in the plane, you know, gave me the thumbs up, said I did a good job. We got in over there and had some lunch, and that was great. And then we saddled up for the ride back. So we're both going back the same way. And so this time I took off first because I'm in the slower plane. He's in an Archer 3, 180 horse. I'm in the 160 horse Cessna. So he catches up to me and he's off my right wing at a pretty good distance. I mean, his plane was pretty small. I would have to say he was he was the better part of a half mile off my wing. So a loose formation would be giving us way too much credit at this point. But it was fun. We were talking back and forth with each other and we could see each other. And I was telling him, you know, you could pull it in a little bit if you want to, you know, we got lots of error room here, you know. But he ended up having some passengers that was not feeling so great. I wouldn't say it was that turbulent, but it's a little turbulent getting over those mountains, but not too bad. But they were also sucking down, what were they? I want to say margaritas, not margaritas, but
Bloody Marys.
Bloody Marys. There they are. There you go. They were sucking down Bloody Marys for lunch.
Was it really Bloody Marys?
It was. It was.
Oh, my.
So,
not good.
I'm just hoping that they can keep it down because Bloody Mary spew inside of an airplane couldn't be a good deal.
You don't want that in your headset bag.
No.
Ew.
Or the side pockets in the airplane.
So, Kyle says that he's going to, you know, try and gain some more altitude and see if he can get out of this bumpy ride a little bit. But, you know, he didn't have to climb that much. We were already up, you know, at 7,500 feet or so. And we stayed with each other for quite a while, but never got really that close. In the video I've got, you know, you can make him out here and there, but he wasn't that close. So we definitely have a little bug, you know, a little taste of this now, and we want to go try it again and see if we can do it better and get a little bit closer. That formation flying seems like a lot of fun. I don't know. You ever guys had a chance to get close with another airplane and keep a communication with them like that?
No.
Only on the Fisk approach at Oshkosh.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I'm sure they were closer than
you're probably closer than me. Yeah, you guys are landing at about a 200-yard distance from each other.
Well, not quite that bad, but
yeah,
close.
So, so that was a lot of fun. Hope to go do that again with them here pretty soon, whenever we get a chance to get back out together. So hopefully, you know, before it gets too hot, we can make another day run at that. So get back to Glendale, and I kind of do a little kind of a modified short approach. My base turn was, I don't know, less than, not much more than a quarter mile from the end of the runway. So just kind of a sweeping turn to final back to Glendale runway 1, and did a nice landing. Matter of fact, just kind of rolled the wheels on. Those are my favorites when you get lucky and get one of those. Just rolled the wheels on. Didn't take any tread off. Made no noise. No one was even certain we were down and coming to a complete stop until I let them know.
So only the 3 bounces?
No bounces. No bounces. It was one of my better landings. So, so got the plane put away and said goodbye to the guys. It was a good day. They had a great time. I had a great time. I love taking guys up who haven't been up in either a long time or have never been up in a small plane. Both of these guys have been up in small planes before. Obviously, the one was a pilot, but it was kind of neat to reacquaint him with, you know, being up in the front seat of a small plane. That's the best.
Did he comment on your landings?
Yeah, well, as good as he could, but, you know, his English is fairly broken. Anyways, check out the video. You'll see what I'm saying. No squeaky, and I didn't even edit it out.
Sure.
Yeah, I know, right?
Uh-huh. As the editor on this fine podcast, mm-hmm. I don't believe you.
You know how that can possibly be done.
Oh, yes.
So, That's it as far as flying's been going, but I did get to go to the Barrett-Jackson auto auction, which was a lot of fun. Have you guys ever watched that on TV before?
No.
No, haven't heard of that one.
No? The Barrett-Jackson auto auction is like one of the largest premier auto auctions in the United States, at least, and they draw crowds that you wouldn't believe. I mean, this thing is not just an auction, but it's an event that's a week long that's held out in Scottsdale. And people come from all over to go to it and buy a car or sell a car or whatnot. And a friend of mine, Franz, who flies the 172 with me, he's a dealer for the Ariel Atom. I've mentioned that before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he had a booth there, and he got me tickets, or he actually had extra passes for exhibitor passes. So he got me in, and a buddy of mine who I work with, and we went over to the auction on last Friday, in fact, and checked it out for a while. And you know, it's not just a bunch of cars being sold. I mean, there's all these cars that are on, you know, that's displayed, but are also being sold. And there's just all kinds of vendors all over the place and manufacturers displaying their cars that are for sale, or custom shops that will, you know, like Lingerfelter. Have you ever heard of them?
I don't know. Do they put wings on cars?
No, well, these cars will go faster than any 172 I've been in, put it to you that way. So so that was a lot of fun. I got to I know I was on TV for a little bit because we were sitting in the middle where the auction was going on and stuff, and a guy right next to my left was bidding on a car, and whenever they do that, guys come over with the cameras and everything, and so I was on ESPN for a little while next to a guy who was bidding on a Thunderbird. He actually ended up winning it, too. I think he spent $78,000 bucks for this old T-Bird. So that was pretty cool. And there was this helicopter that kept going back and forth, back and forth. You'd hear him coming and going all night long, and I think he was just flying over to Scottsdale Air Park and picking up people who were flying in on their private jets and whatnot. The Scottsdale Air Park was just jam-packed with one private jet after another. That's what happens during that weekend.
No, that's the life right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's rough.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go over there and do a little plane spotting on Monday because it ended on Sunday. So I figured a bunch of people would be taken off Monday morning, and since Monday was a holiday, but there just really isn't any good plane spotting areas that's not inside the fence that you can get to and like get good pictures and whatnot. So instead I just ran over to Deer Valley and did it for a little while over there. There was a fair amount of traffic over there that day anyways, and some jets and turboprops and whatnot. Also a cool Mitsubishi MU2. Those are pretty cool. That was one of the ones that was over there. So anyways, that's about it when it comes to flying, but we do have some other topics to cover.
Yeah, Brad, you mentioned you're still studying for something?
Yeah, still working on the commercial. I've got until April 30th to do my check ride. But yeah, I've been trying to get ready for that, make sure I'm ready to pass the written, and getting up and spending some more time in the cockpit, finishing off my Mooney rating, so that I can take the practical exam on it. And you know, should be fun, should be easy. I'm trying to keep it low key. If I'm not ready to go by the end of April, then I'll just do BFR and take care of it that way. But hopefully, you know, I can kill two birds with one stone and get my commercial rating and Not really exercise the privileges, I guess, that much. I've only got the third class medical through the end of this year, so at the end of the year, I'll have to decide if I'm going to get renew to a third class or a second.
Might not even have to renew for a third class.
Yeah,
see how that goes.
That's looking pretty strong.
Oh, with the changes in the FAA?
Yeah.
Actually, well, I would need to renew my third class because I've got access to a six-seat aircraft. And I
no, six-seat is covered.
That's
six
covered.
Seats in.
It's up to six seats under 6,500 pounds, and you can't... But no, the problem you would have is IFR.
Well,
oh, it's VFR.
And this is the issue that uncontrolled airspace guys were talking about, the fact that it would be safer to just include IFR. Because you're going to have a lot of guys who are going to be like, oh, well, I'm
instrument
operating.
Proficient, but I'm not, but I don't have a medical, so I'll go VFR.
Yeah, I'll
either
scud
go VFR
or whatever.
Or try to do it, or they'll just
fly in IMC.
Yeah.
IMC without a clearance.
That kind of stuff.
Oh, that's just terrifying.
So hopefully they'll add something about that, but.
Yeah, what one has to do with the other, I don't know, but it seems like they're always trying to dink around with the regulations to bring up something else to talk about, I guess.
Well, this would be Congress dinking around with the regulations to override the FAA.
Mm.
I think Congress is starting to get fed up with the FAA.
Well, there is that is the biggest caucus now, as you've heard from those guys, you know, the General Aviation caucus. So that's a good sign that more of those guys, well, they all fly GA number one. So,
right.
Although, you know, they're not the pilots most of the time. They're all flying, you know, private chartered, whatever. And they have a second class or first class medicaled, pilot on board. That's a commercial rated pilot, if not ATP. So I don't know. It doesn't maybe directly affect them, but indirectly, at least they can see the point in where this could help things out.
Well, there's still a bunch of guys that fly in there. What's his name? Who pushed all those regulations and landed
Inhofe.
On the wrong?
Yeah,
Inhofe.
Yeah, Inhofe is a pilot. There are a couple others that are pushing things through. Yeah, there's quite a few aviators and have come and gone through Washington D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably about the only time I really want to ever hear anything about the government.
So. We had George H.W. Bush was a fighter pilot in World War II.
Yeah.
Who else have we had?
I don't know.
John Glenn, of course. He was kind of, relatively famous.
Yeah.
Just Senator from Ohio.
Well, there's a couple of them astronauts, right? It wasn't just him. There's a couple other people that went into Congress or Senate. I forget who else. I thought there was somebody else.
I know Gabby Gifford's husband.
Yeah, he's an astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, he's the one that went up on Endeavor's last flight.
I believe so.
Because I watched that flight. I was there for the...
I remember that. Yeah, Gabby Giffords was there, I believe. Yeah, watching the takeoff of that, the launch.
That was
so
cool.
You've been doing your commercial practice tests and been knocking them out of the park. Sounds like you're ready.
I'm getting there. There's always more to learn. Every time I do one of those, I try to find the stuff that I didn't know or I guessed at and try to figure out what it is, what's the regulation behind it, what's the point of it, and do a little homework on it so I understand the whole thing.
Not just the answer, but understand the reasons why.
Understand the reasons why and the incredibly unlikely chance that the FAA gives me a different test. My instrument written was absolutely nothing like the practice exams that I took. And I took conservatively 200 or 300 practice exams for the instrument.
Wow. That's scary.
And I think there were 4 questions total that I had ever seen before.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, memorizing the answers just wasn't going to cut it. You had to actually go through and know how to do all of the stupid... ADF approach navigation stuff that you will just never use.
Mm-hmm.
I have flown one NDB approach, and it's okay. As my CFII said, if you're flying an NDB approach and you find the airport at all, you're doing really well.
Oh, wow.
So it's a ridiculous anachronism that really needs to go away. And the, you know, GPS has been around for decades.
Yeah, they just keep increasing the technology that goes behind that in the new ADS-B, and
you've got WAS approach. WAS approaches, GPS approaches are not on the instrument written.
You know,
to say nothing of WAS, you know, LNAV, LPV, LNAV, VNAV, all of those, which are really important things to know, you won't be tested on any of it.
Why would you? There's just the ones that you're going to use 90% of the time.
You know, and it's not just that kind of stuff either. It's like, look at our weather reports right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're not restricted anymore by, like, typewriters.
Uppercase.
And uppercase and all that. Yeah, no, seriously. I had this conversation on somebody with app.net yesterday. Totally not in the pilot community, one of the tech guys. And he was just like, why on earth do our weather reports look like this? And he put, like, one of the special
weather
stickers.
We have vowels and stuff.
So I was like, you have no idea, because as a pilot, and I sent him the current MIDAR for KMTM, and he was just like, oh my God, I think I just ran out of RAM trying to read that. But it's like, seriously, like, can we not just, like, put these things in, like, you know, English now? We're not restricted by electrons. Like,
right.
There's more.
Memory is more than costs less than a buck a bit.
Yeah.
We're not transmitting these things by telegraph, you know, and trying to make sure and squish them into things.
Yeah, we have better than ticker tape now. So let's
exactly.
Move on.
It kills me.
Well, I'm sure you're going to knock it out of the park, Brad. It sounds like you're ready to do that one, and at least with the commercial ticket, that's something like the technology behind it isn't changing. The maneuvers are the maneuvers. The regs are the regs.
The regs don't change very much. And like you say, the maneuvers are the maneuvers. The plane is still going to fly the same way.
Yeah.
You know, you're still the ability to do lazy eights and chandelles and really understand how the plane works better. And that's really the most interesting thing for me, is to just improve my stick and rudder skills. It'll be interesting, though. Once I finish this, I will have exhausted the category. You know, if I want to avoid a BFR for another 2 years in 2016, it's going to have to be some different category.
But you can go get a. Can you go get a tailwheel? Will that work?
That's an endorsement. No,
no endorsement.
Seaplane.
It could be ASES. It could be AMEL. It could be glider.
Yeah.
It could be balloon, but it has to be. It has to involve a check ride.
Glider might be fun.
Glider be fun. There's some good places to do gliding up here. You pretty much have to fly to get to them in the first place, but you can go a long ways in the summer.
Talk about defeating the purpose. Wow.
Yeah, they don't have the whatever it is that Tupper flies, those motor gliders.
Oh, those motor gliders, yeah. That's a glider.
You can build one. You can build one. Sonics.
The Sonics glider?
They have
Sonics has a motor glider?
They have a motor glider.
Oh. If I was going to build a Sonics, it would be the one with the jet.
There you go. The 1X, baby.
Well, it's 125,000. Is that what it was? I forget what the price was because they announced it at Oshkosh, but yeah.
Turbine time. That's right. I've got turbine time, baby.
Well, you need a type rating.
you didn't need a type in that. There was a specific thing where it was like you could do it with a special dispensation from the FAA, but it pretty much means you had to have jet time beforehand.
Yeah,
so you had to have
a
type rating and something else to get it. But
right.
It was, I forgot. We interviewed him for OPA at Oshkosh, one of the guys that works there, and he was talking about what it took to get certified for the jet. And they had tried to make it so it wasn't specifically a type rating, I think.
Because getting a type rating in a single seat
aircraft is going to be tough.
It's tough.
But you can do it, and I think you can do it in like a Citation or something like that, and then just hop on over to the Sonics.
Piece of cake.
Perfect.
Citation time's not very expensive.
$1,500 an hour.
Yeah.
I forget. I think it was one of their guys who was testing it or something. They made him get some citation time before the FAA would allow him to fly it.
Jeez.
It's like, that's kind of funny.
What's your favorite commercial maneuver, Brad? Shandell?
Probably the Lazy Eights.
Yeah?
Probably the Lazy Eights. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Shandells are fine, too. Mm-hmm. But the Lazy Eights, you are continuously moving all of the controls.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you're constantly changing your pitch attitude, you're constantly changing your roll, and you're just keeping the using the rudders to keep everything aligned. The only thing that you're not touching is the throttle quadrant. You know, you set up the plane, you set up the throttle and the prop to where you want it to be, and then you just start the maneuver, and it's just constantly back and forth.
So why the hell is it called lazy?
Because it is. Yeah. It really is. Once you get the hang of it, it's a very gentle, lazy thing. You're not working very hard. You get the hang of it, you're working your ass off. But up until once you figure it out, it's a very relaxing maneuver. It's very gentle. It's very calm. There's nothing quick in a lazy eight. It's all slow and easy, and you're just letting the plane do the work. The eights on pylons, for me, are the hardest maneuver, and it's a ground reference maneuver, and I've always had a hard time with ground reference maneuvers. I think I nearly made my instructor throw up when I was doing turns around a point for my private pilot's license, because I was so heavy-handed on the controls trying to keep it just right.
Yeah.
But the instructor that's helping me with my commercial gave me some good tips about how to keep the target where you want it to be off of the wing. And that helped a lot. Just once I figured out, okay, if my point that I'm trying to stay around is getting in front of the wing, then I have to dive. And if it's getting behind the wing, then I have to pull up. Mm-hmm. And it all just resets, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's been like 45 days since I last did this, so I probably just said that completely backwards. but when he said it, it made complete sense, and it clicked for me. I'm like, aha, okay, I'm in this position that my point is falling behind is drifting behind the wing. I need to adjust like this, and it just worked.
Now's the time for the disclaimer part about we're not, you know, trying to teach you anything here. It's all general talk.
Yeah, no, anything that you hear me say about flying, you should definitely
don't take to heart.
Discard as being valid. I did have one thing though that I wanted to add that probably is valid. You were talking about the high wing, low wing thing earlier.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys learned this from your CFIs. I learned it after getting my private. But when you're approaching the pattern in a low wing aircraft, I'll put low wing first just because that's what my flying club has. You approach from about 50 to 75 feet below traffic pattern altitude. And then as you enter the downwind, you come up. And if you're in a high wing aircraft, you approach from 50 to 75 feet above traffic pattern altitude. And as you approach the downwind, you come down to the traffic pattern altitude. And you do that because from the low wing plane, you can see up really well. And from the high wing plane, you can see down really well. And so you don't end up, you know, if you approach high from in a low wing plane, you have the classic scenario of the low wing plane parking on top of the high wing plane, right?
Yeah.
And so you take advantage of your blind spot. The high wing plane, you come in high, and so the odds of anybody being further above you are fairly low. And the low wing plane, you come in low because the odds of anybody being further below you are low. And then you use the direction you can see in, and you approach the pattern from that side.
Yeah, it makes sense. I've never heard that before, but it makes sense.
I've always been told to come in from high, and never really a reason why, but considering I've only flown high wings, that makes sense. So I've been doing it all along. I just didn't realize why.
Well, yes, and know, don't do it when you're in a Piper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good to know when I go for the diamond checkout.
There you go. I've flown both and haven't heard that from either instructor that I've used. So good to know.
Though.
So a little bit of educational content.
There you go. Value-added content right there, people.
Yes, it's worth the price that you paid for it.
No extra charge.
The advice hey, this podcast is obviously very general.
It's so general, you wouldn't believe it.
Fly the airplane.
Yeah. In the last podcast, I have to add something here. We should have talked about this in the beginning, but I forgot to mention it. So
it's fine. Go for it.
Okay. So in the last podcast, I commented about, you know, I've got this iPad and I've tried out the 4Flight and the AOPA FlyQ and a couple others. And I kind of like the AOPA FlyQ. I thought it was a great product and I liked all the things that it had to offer. But what I thought was really cool is that they also had a version for Android. And so I'm just going to get rid of the iPad because I already have a Nexus 7. And so I think it was that night I went on the website and was looking at that, and I found out that it's not the same version. It's the FlyQ Pocket, which is just a version that you can do some flight planning on and stuff like that. It has weather and whatnot, but it doesn't have a moving map. So you don't have the whole, you know, where you are now and where you're flying to and, you know, the magenta line and all that stuff. That's not part of it. So I was really kind of bummed. I was really looking forward to just using that.
And if you were a developer, you'd know why.
Oh, okay. So all is not lost when it comes to using the Android, though, in the aviation moving map field, because Garmin Pilot makes the version for the Android, and I haven't used it. My buddy, who has an iPad, Franz, he uses the Garmin Pilot on it, and it works fine. I have never tried it myself. I mean, I've used it while we've been flying, but I've never really set it up and went through all the motions. I've just saw the moving map as we've been flying along with it, so I don't really have that much experience with it. So right before my next flight, I'm going to download it, so I got a 30-day free trial of it, give it a shot, and if it works out, great. I'll keep it, and I'm still getting rid of this iPad. If not, if I don't like it, then I'll probably just keep the iPad. But I just wanted to give you an update on that because I gave out false information as to what products was available for what. So
I'm going to need to play this disclaimer like 4 times now.
I know, huh? What else? We got lots of different topics to talk about, you guys.
I got some other follow-up I'd like to talk about.
All right.
Oh, boy.
And then we're probably going to have to...
Old mail.
We're probably going to have to end this pretty soon. We're starting to run long again. And
yeah.
I know everybody loves it when we do an hour and 40 minutes. But one thing I've been trying to actually do as follow-up for a long time, and I keep forgetting about it, is in relation to the flight review. And I did my flight review, and when I did my flight review, me and my instructor decided, well, he said, and I agreed, that I could not count it as PIC because I was not current. I had a medical, but I wasn't current to fly passengers. I didn't have an active BFR. So there was like no way I could legitimately log or act as PIC. Apparently, I could still log it as PIC. And Ron Klutz and actually somebody else on Facebook, and I can't actually find that message right now, basically said you can still log the PIC time, you just can't act as PIC. So the flight review would be logged as dual and PIC. And he pointed me to Part 6151E on logging PIC time, basically said no mention is made of medical or having a current flight review. Basically, I'm a licensed pilot, so I log PIC. And then the acting PIC is actually an FBO insurance thing, and the FAA only cares about if you can log it or not. They don't actually care about all the other stuff. So I thought that was pretty interesting, and at some point I'm probably going to have to talk to my actually meet up with my instructor again and maybe either amend my thing so that I can get
logbook.
My 2 hours. Yeah, because with log 10, I use log 10, and he signed it on log 10. If I change it, I lose the signature. And if I lose the signature, I lose the BFR.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to change it until I actually have him with me and he agrees, you know, so.
I remember that conversation now that you say that. So I'm not sure who that other person was, too, that you were talking to, because I remember following some of that.
Yeah, so it was definitely it's just interesting how the FAA doesn't care about whether you can actually do it or not. It's just like, legally you can log it, but you can't act it. And I was like, but that makes no sense.
Yeah, go look up the definition of night.
That one, I still am confused onto that one. I just wait till it gets really dark out.
Well, it depends on if you're in Alaska or not, or...
Dude, how do you find... That's right. How do you log... Because you can't log nighttime in certain times in Alaska when the sun never sets.
I refuse to ever fly in Alaska just for that reason. Here, I'm bringing up the FAR now. It's logging pilot and command flight time. A sport, recreational, private, commercial, or airline transport pilot may log pilot and command flight time for flights when the pilot is the sole manipulator of the controls of an aircraft for which the pilot is rated, or has sport pilot privileges for that category and class of aircraft, if the aircraft class rating appropriate, when a pilot is the sole occupant, when a pilot, except for the holder of sport, acts as pilot in command of an aircraft for which more than one pilot is required, when the pilot performs the duties of pilot in command while under the supervision of a qualified pilot in command, provided the pilot performing the duties of the pilot in command holds a commercial or airline transport, an aircraft rating in the appropriate category class, oh my god, what?
Well, that was clear.
Yeah, I have no idea what this means. When the pilot performs the duties while under the supervision of a qualified pilot in command, provided... Oh, interesting. Here you go. When the pilot performs the duties of pilot in command while under the supervision of a qualified pilot in command, provided the pilot performing the duties of pilot in command is undergoing an approved pilot in command training program that includes ground and flight training on the following areas of operation, which is a whole bunch of crap.
I need like a flow chart for that document right there. I believe that was hard to follow.
Basically, it says if you're licensed for the category and class, but not type, you can, and you're the sole manipulator of the controls, you can log it as PIC.
Yeah, but it also specifically is pointing out the fact that if you are basically being given training, even if you're not actually, if you're rated for, wait a minute, hang on.
But logging PIC is not the same as acting as PIC.
So, yeah, so you don't have to have the rating or anything.
That's the critical difference.
It doesn't look like. It looks like you can just, as long as you're being trained.
You don't have to have the type rating.
No, as long as you're just...
But you have to have multi-engine, for example, to get to log PIC time on a multi-engine aircraft.
Yeah, like... if Brad was an instrument-rated multi-engine pilot and he wanted me to come along as a safety pilot, well, I couldn't do that because I'm not multi-engine rated.
No, that you can do.
I didn't think I could.
But safety pilot, I think, is a different
stuff. Safety pilot just has to be a pilot.
Yeah.
It says nothing about the rating.
Anyway,
I read this thing from EAA or AOPA today, and it was like one of those question things, and it was like, this is a little bit different, but... an instrument rated pilot wants to go fly and be under the hood, and you are a sport pilot, and he wants you to come along and be the safety pilot, and you're not allowed because you have to be a minimum of a private pilot.
Correct. I believe that's the specification. Yeah, you have to be a private pilot. You can't be a balloon pilot either.
Hey, where's the burners on this thing to make it go up?
To be a balloon pilot, you have to be a private pilot.
What?
You need the
not
private
pilot. Pilot ASCL.
No, but there's a private pilot for balloon.
Oh yeah.
Right.
But it's not
ASCL.
No, it's not ASCL. But you are technically a private pilot.
Right.
It's easier just to get your ASCL and then get your balloon rating.
I want to get my float balloon rating.
Float balloon. Pretty sure that's a
I
want to
get
balloon.
my instrument balloon.
Oh, God.
I'm going to get my twin balloon instrument rating. Yeah.
Yeah, instrument. You would never, ever know.
God, turn to a heading like... of 330 degrees. Yeah, whatever, dude. It's up
you
to
have
the wind,
to,
not
you
me.
Have to have an instrument rating if you're going to fly your balloon above 18,000.
Yeah, that and I mean, some other things.
That's the way it is.
So how did Kittinger and what's-his-name do it?
Oh, man, they had NASA on their side.
They had more than an instrument rating.
They had backers. Let's shout them out.
Any shout-outs?
I have a shout-out. Let's shout it out. Well, my first shout-out was going to go out to Kyle Matthews. Great flying up to Sedona with you. That's KMATCHD on the Twitter machine. It's great flying up there with you, and hopefully we can go do that again. And I have another shout-out to my buddy Eric. Eric, unfortunately, was recently in an accident. Eric is also known as Aviator Show on Twitter. And Eric was recently in a balloon accident, or not a balloon, I'm sorry, we were talking about balloons, is a powered paraglider. No, powered paramotor. What is it? Is that what they're called? Paramotor, is that right? Yeah, paramotor.
Powered parachute?
Yeah, it's a powered parachute, but not the kind what would you call it? Like the little go-kart underneath you. It's just the kind with the seat in it. So I don't know if you call them powered paramotors or powered parachutes, but anyways, Eric unfortunately was in a accident here not too long ago, a few weeks back, and broke his back in three spots.
Ouch.
So,
yeah. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
And this wasn't Eric's first incident he's ever had, but it sounds like the worst. But he's in good spirits. He's doing okay. So go over there to @AviatorShow and wish him a healthy return. He'll be back up in no time, I'm sure. He's got a great support group out there. He's out there in Florida. The funny thing was is that he was supposed to be out here in Phoenix a few weeks ago getting his tandem rating so he could fly with another person, do dual flights, and I was going to go fly with him. But unfortunately, that accident happened like the day before or 2 days before he was supposed to come out. So kind of ruined those plans, unfortunately. But hopefully he heals well and is able to come back out here and finish that up. Oh, and hey, I've got one more shout out. Tyler C. Never met Tyler, but he just commented on on one of my YouTube videos that he's liking the podcast and everything. So I told him I'd do a shout out to him. So Tyler C, thanks for watching the videos. Thanks for listening to the podcast.
And with those shout outs, let's go ahead and do a quick round on anybody who wants to reach us where they can do that. So Chris,
sure. If you want to reach me, you can. Shoot an email over to chris@inthepatternpodcast.com. You can reach me on Twitter at CHOLUBAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ. You can also find that same handle on YouTube if you'd like to check out a few videos.
All right, I'm Brad.
You can reach me at brad@inthepatternpodcast.com or on the Twitterverse at Brad Kane. Or on Diaspora at bkane@diaspora.kane.com. And Kane is spelled Kilo Oscar Echo Hotel November.
And don't go looking for him at Google. And
true dat.
For me, you can find me, John, at InThePatternPodcast.com. I am on Twitter at Pilot Conway, Facebook, John L. Conway IV. And I'm also on app.net a whole lot lately, and that is also at Pilot Conway. So for the entire podcast, you can reach all of us at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com or on our website, inthepatternpodcast.com. We are on Twitter and Google Plus as In The Pattern, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/inthepatternpodcast. If you like new updates on episodes, you can go to our homepage and join our mailing list. It's on the right side of the page, and we won't use any of your information for anything except new updates. So go ahead and check that out. Also, finally, you can leave us a voicemail or a text at 707-PCAST-01, and that's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01. Please send us any of your suggestions or comments. We'd love to get feedback from you guys. And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up episode 34 of the In the Pattern podcast. We'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
The Voices in Your Head .com.
But the side button, what side button? Oh, no.
That's mute. Now, above the volume is the mute button.
Oh, the little slider thing.
That's notification mute. That puts it on silent. Wow.
Well, in that case, I'm keeping it. Just kidding.
We're at 17 minutes of, like, legit show.
But half of that was weather.
It's true. You can't have an aviation podcast without weather.
See ya! That was my see ya that the airline pilots do.
Was that like a Bammy Wham?
Do you ever hear that?
Oh, God.
A Bammy Wham?
That's the end of the episode now.
See ya!